and welcome to the Awakening Sound Summit. So my name is Clara Fink, and it's a great joy and honor to share this space today with a very special human being, Tom Kenyon. And many of you know him as a true pioneer in the field of sound and voice. He's one of the most well-known and deeply respected sound healers of our time with a global following. He's teacher, scientist, sound healer, psychotherapist, musician, songwriter, singer, author, and so much more. And his music, his deep wisdom around the alchemy of sound, and his profound connection to the Haters have touched and inspired generations of people around the world. So first he studied at the Columbia Pacific University. He worked over a decade as a clinical psychotherapist, performed as a singer, and has received in-depth training in multiple spiritual traditions. He is widely recognized as a specialist in the healing and transformation through sound, and has developed his own unique form of energy work. And yes, countless people have been moved and transformed by this knowledge, his love, his humor, and his extraordinary voice. So with that, welcome, Tom, and it's a true gift to have you with us today.
It's nice to be with you.
Thank you. So my first question, you are widely recognized as a pioneer of sound healing. And so could you tell us about the moment when you first personally experienced the transformation of sound, the transformative power that sound has, and what inspired you to dedicate yourself so deeply in this field?
Well, I think that started when I was playing in bars. When I was in college, I put myself through school by playing at nighttime in bars and lounges. And I discovered that I could play certain types of music and get a bigger tip because I had a jar on the piano. And if I played sad songs, the depressed audience members would put money in. And when I played a happy song, the happy people would put money in. And so the happy people would come up and say, play me a happy song, Tom. And I play a happy song. They load it up with tips. And then the sad people couldn't take that happiness anymore. And they came up, play a sad song, please. So I didn't know at the time what was happening. But I knew that how I played a song affected people. That understanding came to me through the work of Manfred Kleins, Clynes. If you look him up in your browser, he's a consummate expert in sound, vibration, and emotion. And he discovered something called synthetic waves, which is that any sound source that vibrates, including the human voice, can create synthetic waves and create an emotional response in the audience. So that's what was happening in the lounges. I didn't understand, but I knew I could feel the happiness or the sadness. Mm-hmm. It was later I understood the synthetic waves and the mathematics that Dr. Klein said. I don't know if he's a doctor, but he should be. If he's not recognized, he's brilliant. And so then I got my training in psychotherapy and psychological counseling and started seeing people. And I had come, this was in the early 80s, and there was a beginning to understand music therapy. There was research coming out of the Lozanov Institute of Bulgaria. And Dr. Lozanov was the first person to clinically document that certain types of music could increase alpha activity. And so he identified Baroque music, the slow-paced parts of Baroque music, as an alpha generator. So I started playing that music for my clients, and they relaxed more. And because they could relax, they could get more work done in less time. It saved them time, energy, and money. And being a musician, I started to compose music at 60 beats per minute just as an experiment. I played it for my clients. And they wanted to hear what I wrote over the classical music. And it was just, you know, a thing about rapport. It wasn't that the music was better. It was just coming from someone that they felt was a conduit for healing. And so that came together in recognizing that sound could really accelerate the psychological therapeutic process. And so I developed programs for therapists to use. And it became quite a thing. It took a life of its own. It really shifted in around 1985, 86. I got a letter from a teacher of physiology at a Midwestern university. And he said a student of his was in class and he was talking about brain waves. And he said, music cannot could not produce theta activity in the brain. Mm-hmm. And a student raised his hand, excuse me, sir, but I have a tape here. We're talking about in the 80s, where cassette tapes were not CDs. He said, I have a cassette tape that does just this. And so being the great scientist, he said, bring it on up and let's test it out. So he put on the tape with another student, so somebody who had never heard this before. And sure enough, there was an increase of theta activity. And he said, there's something wrong here. This cannot be. So we checked the equipment and had another student come up, same result. He was so convinced that this was not possible that he called the company that manufactured the EEG machine. They came in, looked at it and said, it's fine. So then he was looking at the data more deeply and he noticed that at the crown center, what we call the crown chakra, happens to be one of the locations for electrodes when you do an EEG. And so that picked up a huge burst of theta activity. And what caught him was that he was just started reading Patanjali's Yoga Sutras and was studying yoga and had come across information about the crown chakra. And so in all the vastness of the brain, which is a universe unto itself, there was this burst at the top of the head at the crown. He was blown away by that. And he said, Tom, help me change how we are teaching about music and sound in the universities. So that was the big turning point for me. It was the interface of my personal naive experience in my 20s when I was playing in bars, then my understanding about synthetic waves. Then I got trained in psychology, and then I got into brain research, and then it just flourished from there.
So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing this glimpse into your own journey. It's beautiful to hear how sound entered your life in what different ways. And that brings me directly to my next question, because it's perfect. So in your opinion, what makes sound so special compared to other healing methods? Why do you believe it was given to the world, yes, and what opportunities come with it? What do you think?
That's an interesting question. One way to approach this, because there are many ways to approach this, but in yoga, out of the Vedic period of India, there's a phrase, not a Brahman, means the world is sound. And actually it means the world is vibration, but it's translated directly as sound. There was a recognition by the sages, both in China and in Eastern Asia and other places as well, that sound vibration was the essence of all things that exist. So from the yogic perspective, we would say that everything that exists is vibrating, and it's called Shakti. So everything has Shakti. So if it exists, it's vibrating. It has a vibrational field. So it's going out and affecting things in its local environment and sometimes the very big environment. And so it's that extraction of the sound that matches the vibratory nature of reality from the yogic perspective. From the Western scientific perspective, we could say that quantum physics has clearly demonstrated that everything is vibrating. And so it's a question of where you are, vibrationally speaking. When we talk about sound healing and transformation, we're introducing an element that may be very different in a person's experience because the sounds are very unusual. And that generates a response in the person and interacts with their vibration. And I should actually say vibrations because we are so complex. Every organ and cell of the body is vibrating and has a sound. I don't know if you heard or saw when NASA sent a probe to record the sounds of the planets in the solar system, you could actually hear the sounds of the planets. So in Egyptian alchemy, there's a phrase, as above, so below, as within, so without. So the structure of the universe is recapitulated in our bodies. In fact, latest research, what I'm very excited about, astronomers have identified the structures of the celestial bodies. And it looks like the brain structures. So our brain structure, literally how the cells of our body are organized and clustered into regions, match the topography of the universe. It's wild. So when you're doing sound healing, it's the transmission of a sound that you bring in through your connection. I call it the great mystery. We don't really know what it is, but it's powerful and it moves. And some people call it God, spirit. When you connect to that part of yourself and you are directing that sound to someone, That sound carries your vibration of your consciousness, interacts with the consciousness of the person receiving, and then magic can unfold. And the reason the magic unfolds, in my opinion, is because sound has the ability to shift consciousness very rapidly. The way that the acoustic pathways from the ear up into the auditory cortex of the brain is very complex, and it creates an immediate change in our physiology and our perception. So there is something called the RAS, the reticular activating system, that's at the base of the brain and in the brainstem. And its purpose is to alert the brain to something that needs to be paid attention to. It's a survival circuit. Mm-hmm. It's from like when we were in caves and a monster would come in, a woolly mammoth might come in, it's a big cave, and we'd be startled. And the RAS would send a signal up into the upper parts of the brain and say, wake up, we got to get, you know, pay attention. Something's different. It might be a threat. But if it's a calm sound, a sound or any pattern that repeats itself, it relaxes. And it can happen with sound. It can happen with light. I don't know if you, in Germany, if you're driving at night and you see those little dots on the road, the middle of the road, that tell you don't go over this side. If you look at it and you're going the same speed at night, sort of going back at the same pace, you can become very sleepy. You go all into a trance. You have to be careful at night because the IRS is always operating. So in sound healing, the way I work with it is we're relaxing the RAS, having it calm down to create a signal of calmness, which activates what we call the parasympathetic nervous system, which is relaxing. You have the sympathetic nervous system that turns things on, makes ready fight or flight or freeze, the parasympathetic where we calm down. Healing takes place in the parasympathetic nervous system when that is activated. We live in a highly stressed world right now. We're overstimulated. We don't have periods of rest and deep nourishment that comes from the parasympathetic nervous system. So sound is a great ally because it's just exquisitely tied in to the brain.
Yes, yes. So it, yes, it can remember us as who we are and who we are connected, and yes, that's a very, very, nice opening. So it's wonderful. Thank you for sharing. It sounds great, and it's so important in these times, I think. And you personally have a connection with the Hatters, and you wrote it's a special moment in your own spiritual journey. And how has your interaction with the Hatters changed your personal perspective on sound and these frequencies?
I often say they were uninvited guests. When they appeared to me, I was in the height of my brain research, my scientific approach, very analytical, very structured, small in my view of things. So I thought everything was just brain state phenomena in terms of perception. And so I was doing a Siddhas, a private retreat. Siddhas is a type of yoga. And they appeared to me, too, came in the room. They were psychically, I saw them psychically, not physically. I had a psychic impression. One spoke, one never spoke. And the first one said, we are the Hathers. We come in with the sounding of a new reality for your earth. And it began. And he started teaching me. And he began to teach me about sacred geometry and the brain. And he gave me some exercises to do that he said would improve my brain function. And I tried them. And something did improve. But I couldn't accept who they were, who they said they were. So being in that scientific mode at the time, I formed 3 beta test sites in the state of Washington in 3 different cities and did a free presentation on this method for people. It was like a 4-week course or something like that. And everyone was having breakthroughs. I mean, there was there was the head of an art department who had a crisis because he was asked to do a exhibit of his work. And he hadn't done anything in years because he was just dried up. He didn't have any inspiration. And he was panicky because he might lose his job. He took this course and he reported after the first time that he was feeling creativity bubbling up for the first time in years. And by the end of the course, he said he was starting to work on a new sculpture, and he did the show. There was a woman who had no feeling in the back of her back. Her entire back was, you know, just not receiving information. All of a sudden, she felt her back caught on fire, and the nerves regenerated. And she was so excited, she was going to everyone in the room, saying, "Touch my back! I can feel you. Touch my back! I can feel you." So there are a lot of stories. I won't take up the time, but it was a pivotal moment for those people. And someone asked me, "So where did this come from?" And I was I said, "The Hathors." I didn't want to talk about it. It took a long time for me to accept. And then we're talking about 30, we're talking 40 years of hanging out with these beings. And their view of reality is so expanded, far beyond my understanding. So I've now had enough experience with them to trust. And their whole thing is about, in their sound work, if you go to the website, there's a lot of free content. And all the Hathor sound meditations are there for free. And you can hear they have messages. You go to the Hathor section of the website. But I think the fundamental thing I would like to say about the Hathors, and from my perspective, is that they are masters of love and sound and humor. They find it intrinsically amusing to be existent. Existence itself, they perceive as humorous in a good way. So, and that's because it's a much higher vibration than most of us hang in. So, yeah, when I first started interacting with them and they were sharing, I said, "Yeah, well, when you can pay the rent and make the car payment, then we'll talk." Eventually, I realized this is a whole vast expanse of information and knowledge that is valuable to me. And I find it's valuable to other people.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thanks for sharing.
Your perspective is about this moment in time.
Yes.
As you and I are talking, we are in approaching a powerful full moon, a lunar eclipse.
Yes.
We are having, if you go to, you can go to Stephen Burns, Stephen Burns, at YouTube. He has these postings. He's a geophysicist. It's all science. And he's talking about how the Earth is actually changing and morphing in relationship to the solar winds that we're experiencing. According to NASA, they're going to continue through all of this year and into next year sometime. So when there is evidence that when the solar storm occurs, and other celestial bodies are sending information and energy throughout the entire cosmos, but when our sun starts sending out these photonic storms, it affects our heart, our DNA, and our cellular structures and our brain. And there's research beginning to show that this is true. The Hathors talked about this decades ago. You're approaching a time when there'll be very rapid transformation. That's their main point. We need to understand we are in a powerful collective transformation. And where each of us goes in that is expression of our vibration, our consciousness, and our choice. But it's a very powerful and, of course, difficult moment. Yeah. Also,
yes,
that's very. The transformation isn't always unicorns and rainbows. Sometimes it's tough work.
Yes, yes, I think so. And very, very, very important point. So over the years, you told, you have developed numerous of sound healing techniques and musics. Is there a particular method or approach that holds special significance for you, especially in the light of the current times you speak about? So what's the main thing we can do when we work with sound, we feel sound? What do you think?
Well, let's approach it from two ways. One would be passive and one active. So the passive, one of the ways to work passively is to listen to some of the sound meditations the Hathors have given. They're free on the website. You don't have to pay for them. And then you can experience the sound directly yourself, and it will shift something. And it can be quite a journey if you really go into this, but you can go as deeply as you want. Actively, this comes to the understanding of yoga, which is that the throat chakra is the creation chakra, where we use our voice. Our voice originates from the vocal cords. It actually comes from its subtler place in consciousness, but it shows up in our body through our vocal cords. And we are affecting things by how we speak to ourselves, how we speak to each other. Those have effects. When you and I are having this conversation, we're actually creating field effects around us. And for people who are watching this and listening to it, it can't help. It just happens. It's an automatic thing. So we are at a very precarious place collectively where people are so agitated and polarized that sometimes it's very difficult to have a coherent conversation with someone. And so how we speak to each other, especially how we speak to ourselves, because sometimes our worst critics are inside of us, and how that can affect our approach to something that's occurring or something that we're dealing with in ourselves, it's all very important, a very important field of information.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, very important in these times. And yeah, that brings me to another topic, because I find this fascinating and important. And you say that everything is frequency, and this is Shakti, and Shakti is the feminine power in the understanding of yoga. So you write a book, The Magdalene Manuscript, co-authored with your wife, and it's about the feminine power. So you also emphasize that this manuscript made a turning point for you, providing a new perspective on the role of relationships in the spiritual connection. And I think singing is also a form for relationship, through which the voice flows to people and people, or to me. And so did these insights bring new impulses in your sound work? As you wrote about the feminine way, and give us a deeper understanding of the feminine power, be connected with sound. So that's the question.
It's a deep question. It has many ramifications. The Magdalene Manuscript happened because we were in Zurich in winter, and we were doing a workshop, and we had some downtime, and it was nighttime. It was pouring down rain, almost snow and sleet, and nothing was open. And at the time, well, I still don't speak German, but I now can speak a few words, but then I knew nothing. So it was nothing to do. We couldn't watch TV. We wouldn't understand it. So Judy said to me, "Do you mind seeing who you might channel?" And I said, sure. It was a search for entertainment. It's what started it all. And so Magdalene came in, this energy came in that was the most powerful thing I've ever experienced in my life. And Judy said the same thing for her. And she just started giving her story. And the book came out of that. There were so many things that came out of my relationship with Magdalene and also with Judy as my partner. But one of the main flips for me was that up till then, I felt that the spiritual journey was solitary. Mm-hmm. It's not about relationships at all. It's about you in relationship to the great mystery, God, spirit, whatever you want to call it. And because I had been, in my personal mythology, I had been a yogi and a hermit for so many lifetimes, that was deeply ingrained in me. This is just between me and the mystery. To introduce a woman, a relationship, as a means to attain realization was a new idea. And then I came across yogis who talked about this when I started reading, but that was the big pivotal point. Mm-hmm. So the feminine, we are in such a strange moment in time from my perspective. If you, in terms of Jungian psychology, the feminine can be symbolized by water and the earth. So we even call earth Gaia. She's a goddess. Our culture is pillaging the planet. Mm-hmm. If we can have stories about why we are doing what we're doing, and that's fine. But if you look at the deeper level, we're pillaging the planet to bring things out that we need without giving anything back. Mm-hmm. We don't take care of the environment. The environment is morphing because of so many factors. And so our culture, women are so depreciated in our culture. It's all over the world, different forms in different countries, but it's the same thing shows up again and again and again. And the true irony of it all is that the female being is responsible for procreation of the species, takes care of the child until the point where it becomes an adult. So the nurturing, protection, birthing is, none of this would exist without the feminine. But somehow the guys are looking at it this way and are not paying attention to anything else. So we're in this fluid transition where the feminine is coming in to power. We did an event with Magdalene in Washington, D.C. many, many years ago, I think at least a decade. And this is typical of Magdalene's power. She had us get a compass and particular types of geometric patterning that we would set the altar in a certain way. She had us take gold and silver and cast it together to symbolize the union of the male and female. She had given us a technique. She said, this is how I would do it. And this is so typical. The woman, the top goddess in this particular pantheon, gave instructions on how to easily do the gold and silver merging. I, however, did some research and found some other methods. So I was using that with Judy, and we were down to 1 hour before the ferry leaves. And if the ferry left, we couldn't catch our flight and the whole thing would fall apart. And we're just standing there next to the little foundry we had. And Magdalene says, why don't you try the simple method I suggested? So there we have the feminine wisdom and intuition and the male stupidity. I mean, it's a classic thing. So anyway, it came together very quickly, just like she said. We rushed off to the ferry, got to DC, and when we got there, the pendant, the silver part, which was symbolized the feminine, had been totally encased by the gold representing the male. You couldn't see the feminine anywhere. Now, this is where it gets really weird. So she had us put the candles and have a compass, a very expensive compass, she said, we needed to get, and place things at certain angles. So during the alchemical part of the workshop, where those things were brought in line, the compass started going crazy, spinning around. This is an expensive compass. And she whispered and said, don't worry, this is what happens when spiritual energy enters the local environment, the electromagnetics change. Now, interestingly, we had some students in France who were mimicking what we were doing. At the same time, they had an altar, they had gold and silver, they had a compass, and they said their compass was spinning around too, at the same. We're talking about across the Atlantic Ocean. So when the thing is over, I go up and Magdalene says, go check the altar, look at the pendant. I swear to God, the silver had come up into the surface and it was half gold and half silver. How did that happen? There was no heat, no energy. It still blows my mind. This was a physical manifestation. So this is the power of the feminine in one expression that we call Magdalene.
Yes, yes. Wow. What a beautiful, wisdom about the feminine. What a beautiful story about the power of the feminine. And on your website, so for everybody, the link is below, you write, the birth process has clearly begun. Find yourself a good midwife. And this is also a wife. So my question is, what qualities make a good midwife? And what kind of midwife we truly need in this time?
A super midwife. Well, I think the midwife is a metaphor that shows many aspects. But one of them is we have to be sober and clear about our relationships. So our friends, the people we associate with, if they're supportive, then they become a midwife. We can tell them something and they receive it and they reflect back in their honesty, but they're not judgmental and they're not trying to make us smaller. They're just witnessing it. That's a good midwife. The From the Hathor's perspective, and I live on an island that's, we don't even have a traffic light on this island. We live in nature. And the trees are a midwife. And Hathors talk about trees a lot as a resource, energy resource. So a midwife is, could be an animal or an animal spirit. It could be a tree. It could be people. Most likely, in many cases, it's going to be your relationships. So we have to be clear to have relationships where we are at least accepted and not criticized.
Yes.
And so part of the thing that happens in spiritual growth is that we often have these understandings that elevate us. But if we share it with the wrong person who doesn't share that openness, they'll crush it. They'll shut it down. So that's not possible. Yes. And then, so we have to be careful who we communicate our, well, Jesus said, don't throw your pearls before swine. Mm-hmm. He was talking about the pearls of the heart. Don't throw them to people that don't, they'll never understand what you're talking about. And all they will do is damage you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean. We need to pick good midwives. Part of that is about relationships to other human beings, to cats and dogs, other animals, and to the elements.
Yes.
Earth, nature.
So it's time to check all the relationships and what is good for us, what is bad for us at this times, and check in how is my good midwife for me. Yes, so that's a very good point. And that flows perfectly in my next question, because you describe in some of your books and articles how sound healing serves as a tool of transformation, we talked about, and how we can use it in these times, in this great transformation. So what message would you like to share with the summit, with the people at the summit? So regarding the use of sound in these times of change, so is there anything you want to share with us, what's important for you?
Let me answer the question from the perspective of somebody who is a sound healer, mm-hmm. and also from the perspective of someone who's just exploring this for the first time. So if you're a sound healer and you're using sound, especially if you're using your voice, now, the research shows that anything can be used as a vehicle for sound, like a piano or guitar, an instrument, a cello, any instrument that creates a vibrational field can create a synthetic wave and affect consciousness of the person listening. So it's the sound. If you're a sound healer, you're using your voice, I'm assuming, but there are other instruments that you could be using. If you're using your voice, you're creating a field effect with the sounds that you're making. And the higher, for me, this is just my perspective. You talk to other sound healers, they would have different perspectives, I imagine. But my perspective is, we're talking about the mystery of quantum mechanics and quantum physics. When you have two people come together for a healing, if the sound healer, quote unquote, can drop into a place of resonance with the other person and let the sound come through, you know, in the shamanic tradition, it's called being the hollow reed, where you let the sound, the spirit or the energy come through you. You don't block it anyway or refine it anyway. It just comes through you. Mm-hmm. And so if you're able to do that, then your sound will affect the other person and your acceptance of the other person. And it's about a mutual, even though the one person is making sound, the other person is receiving the sound. In some methods, the person also makes sound, whatever methodology you're using. It all comes down to how you hold the person in your heart and mind, so to speak, has an effect on what happens. So if you are not non-judgmental and accepting, and you just allow the sound to come through, it can be a very powerful experience for the other person and also for you. And when I was teaching sound healing, it was a common experience where people reported at one point they didn't know who was the healer and who was the healed. The two entered a morphogenetic field that was so integrated that you couldn't tell who did the healing and who was healed. Both were touched by it. So I think that's the higher expression of the potential we have as human beings to make sound and direct it for healing. If you're exploring this for the first time, this whole field of sound healing, then I would find some sound meditations that you feel are nourishing or feel comfortable, and explore it. Go in and just listen, relax, listen to the sound and see what happens. Maybe have a journal even of your reactions.
Yes.
There's a method called I call it the Vygotsky method. It was developed by a linguist in Russia named Vygotsky, and he took children who were had not been socialized yet. They were just learning. And he took children who were too young to have words for color and another group of kids who had just learned words for color. And he had this three, you know, eggs and a piece of candy under it, and he would move it around and they would point. And there were three different colors. What he discovered to his amazement was the children who had words for color got the egg more often than those who did not. Mm-hmm. So the capacity of the brain to create language around something enhances the neurological connections in the brain. So when I do workshops, I sometimes suggest that people go through a sound experience and then write out exactly what they experience so that they can get trained the brain to shift into its awareness to the subtle realms of sound and vibration. Because it's you have to actually engage, if you engage the language part of your brain to describe to yourself what happened, you will have a more powerful and transformational experience because the brain is integrating not only the sound, but the language description of the sound, which we know is very helpful.
Yes. So how do you see the future development of sound healing in these times? This is very interesting for me and for us, I think. You started in the 80s with the experience you told us, but how you see the future, what did you think happen with the sound, with the understanding of sound, of vibration in the next years or in the next decades?
Well, there's if we expand sound healing to include the full gamut of what it is, then it gets extremely complicated and beautiful also. Sound is used in ultrasound. Treatments using ultrasound. There are methods for brain systemic problems. The magnets are put against the head and programmed to send frequencies into the brain. That's sound healing. It's a vibrational healing.
Yes.
So these technologies in medicine are just blossoming all over the place. In terms of the personal evolution that those who are doing sound healing for themselves or for others, it's a journey into yourself to discover the treasures that are inside of you that you haven't discovered yet. Because I think that's the great gift of sound healing, is it allows the person receiving it to see things that they might not have seen before, and that can change destiny. It can change how a person interacts with the world and with themselves.
Mm. Yes. So that's perfect for my next question because, thanks for sharing all that. But if you could make a wish for the humanity regarding sound and constitutionals, what would it be? So what would the wish be?
Wake up.
Wake up.
Wake up.
A short but very important wish, I think.
We're running around half asleep. We don't realize we're living in the mystery. We oftentimes just see things at the surface, but if you go deeper, I mean, if you're not even a spiritually inclined person, you could look at the latest research in quantum mechanics and look at their latest research in consciousness and plants. And you could see that the world we live in is a miracle. We don't see it because we're shuttered in to live narrow lives to be productive. But and you can still be productive and open up the spiritual doors of perception. And that's when the light can come in and you see that you live in a beautiful mystery. However difficult life may be from moment to moment, it's always an incredible miracle that we're surrounded by. And the beauty of sound healing is it allows you to connect to a vibrational field of your choice and bring it into your consciousness and nurture it and let it move you to new heights in your own nature. I see that's what is important. Sound is a vehicle to unveil the beauty and the power that you have.
Yes.
And it can do that in the right context.
Yes. Yes, and you shared in many of your works, yeah, you speak about activating the divine through sound, yeah, through the voice, and that it helps us to go in the divine potential to wake up. So it's perfect for the Awakening Sound Summit. So
that's right.
So at your website, the people can find any information, any music, a lot of gifts you give to the people for free, so they can dive in and feel what's happened. And so thank you, yes, for this interview, for this from the bottom of my heart, for all this you've shared with us today. And for me, an interview is never just a conversation where words get back and forth. So it's a sacred space, yeah, a field of energy, realizations and insights can unfold on many levels, not about the words, but in any way. So thank you for taking the time to offer this space today for me and the whole community who is here this in future. And so I'd love to give you the final word or words with a deep bow of gratitude. And I would to ask, what message would you like to share with all the people who hear that? What do you feel still want to be added to this conversation to bring it in a full completion? Is there anybody, anything you want to share, you feel in this energy field, in this interview field, what you want to share at the at this point? So thank you from me to you, and that's your final word.
Okay. I think I'd like to reference an avatar by the name of Meher Baba. And Meher Baba was a real avatar, a world avatar. He didn't take a course and get a certificate. He's the real deal. And he had tremendous powers, and I won't take up the time to describe it, but he said something that was very poignant, sounds simple, but it points to the complexity and the beauty of human consciousness and its transformational potential. His words were, "Don't worry, be happy." Don't worry, be happy. Now that sounds like just surface blah, blah, blah. But we now know from neuropsychology that actually the attitudes you hold affect how your brain perceives yourself and the world. So when we are in a state of happiness or joy, our physiology is different. The biochemicals change. That's what's really important. When you have an emotional shift, you experience the emotion, but your entire body is going through hormonal shifts because it's readjusting to the new vibrational emotion that you're experiencing. So this is a constant thing. And his point is, to summarize his perspective from our standpoint in time, we are in a very precarious, difficult passage evolutionarily for the planet, collectively and individually. His words speak to us from another century, but it has been verified by science that how you and I feel affects us and the world we live in. And his advice is, don't worry. So put his words in the context of what's going on. Yes, Earth is going through changes. Planets are colliding with us energetically. The sun is spewing out photons. Plants and animals are disappearing from your world. You're stressed. Everything's crazy. Don't worry, be happy. In an island of serenity surrounded by the turbulence, each of us has that capacity to create an inner refuge place. And that's his wisdom. And that's what I would end with. His words, don't worry, be happy.
Thank you.
Thank you.